If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, my name is Dr. Lloydine Jacobs. I graduated from Hostos Lincoln Academy in 2002. While I was there, I also took some courses at the community college. I'm an orthopedic surgeon now.
And let's go back. Okay. When you're in high school, when do you decide that you're going to be a doctor?
I actually decided I wanted to be a doctor when I was 5 years old. And that's a pretty interesting story. I can tell you if you want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
My older brother, we have different moms, but when he was in college, he didn't really take it seriously and was failing a lot of his classes. But one day he found out that his mother was dying of stage 4 ovarian cancer and kind of was diagnosed very late and took everyone by surprise. So he went to see her one day before she died, and she looked at him and told him that he was the biggest disappointment of her life. And so that really, you know, moved him and motivated him, and he promised her before she died that he would change his life. And so he thought hard and realized that he wanted to be a doctor. And he went and talked to his guidance counselor, who laughed in his face because, you know, he had so many Fs on his transcript. But he made a promise, and so he didn't give up. He got straight A's from that point on, you know, graduated a year later, which was a miracle, but obviously couldn't get into medical school. So he did a post-bac program, got straight A's, still couldn't get into medical school. He went to Fordham University and graduated at the top of his class with a master's and still couldn't get into medical school. So he started doing some research, and he actually got published in a very high-quality journal, still couldn't get into medical school. And so he tried and tried and tried, and 4 years later, he was about to give up, and, you know, he prayed to God and said, you know what, if this is not what you want for me to do, then I'll just stop. I'll try one last time. And he got in, and I was around 5 years old at the time. And everyone was so proud of him because he turned his life completely around. About 6 weeks after he got his acceptance letter to medical school, he was walking down the street, minding his own business, and got shot in his head in broad daylight. You know, it was crazy. I still remember my father on his knees crying out to God in the emergency room to save his life. And the neurosurgeons came in and they said that there's not much they can do. His brain is swelling uncontrollably and nothing's helping, and that he was probably going to die. And if he didn't die, he would just be a vegetable. And so my father kneeled by his bedside and prayed for 2 weeks straight. He would not move. And they did emergency surgery. And when it was over, he was pretty much a vegetable. He couldn't do anything. He was on the ventilator for a long time, couldn't even breathe on his own. But my father would not move. He kept praying the whole time. And eventually, he was able to start breathing on his own. He eventually was able to start talking again, was able to start walking again with time. And he went to medical school a year and a half later. He would not give up. And so I saw that when I was 5 years old, and I was just blown away at how, you know, God was able to use these surgeons to save his life. And so ever since then, I wanted to be a surgeon, just like that, so I could help save people's lives.
That's a beautiful story. And how come orthopedic surgery?
That's a good question. Because I actually wanted to be a neurosurgeon my whole life. Until my third year of medical school, when I was on my neurosurgery rotation, I realized that it can be pretty depressing, you know, because a third of their patients died. A third of their patients were never the same, just like, you know, they thought was going to happen to my brother, and only a third of them do well. And I realized that I wanted to be in a profession where I could help people in a more reliable way. A lot of times when there are issues that occur to the brain, there's not much you can do. You do your best, but you can't always save the person. And so actually didn't know what I was going to do with my life because I wanted that my entire life. And so I was lost. It was pretty scary because I had to make a decision as to which residency I was going to apply to in like 3 weeks. And so I was completely lost, and I had just prayed to God, and I said, you know what? I don't know what to do with my life. Just show me whatever it is you want me to do, and I'll do it. And as soon as I prayed that prayer, everything just became crystal clear. People started coming up to me and asking me if I was interested in orthopedics, and I said no because I wasn't. And then I had my orthopedics rotation, and little by little, you know, I just started to feel more and more like this was my calling. And everything just kind of worked out. And so I just literally felt like God was telling me, this is what I want you to do. I don't know why, but I just did what I thought he wanted me to do.
It's very inspiring. And I have several questions regarding this story, but I want to now go back.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me where you grow up.
Mm-hmm.
And how you end up at Ostos Lincoln Academy, and how your experience was.
So I grew up in the Bronx near White Plains Road. Mm-hmm. To give you some background on my upbringing, I have to tell you about my father, because he was a character. My father was a brilliant man. My parents are from Antigua in the Caribbean. And when my father was a child, his mother died when he was very young, and his father, you know, had to work a lot to help support the children, and they were very poor. But my father was very, very bright, and he was noticed by, you know, his teachers and was able to go to the best grammar school on the island, which really, you know, helped him blossom. And so he did really well and was able to go to college on a full scholarship. He wanted to learn Spanish, so he went to Puerto Rico, didn't know a word of Spanish, graduated summa cum laude, and just learned Spanish on the fly. And after that, he came to New York and went to Columbia University, got his master's degree in education, started his doctorate in education, but then got called back to go to Antigua to be the minister of education for the country. So he did that for a few years and really helped to turn their educational system around. And after Antigua got their independence in 1981, he was then appointed to be the first ambassador to the United Nations, so that brought him back to New York. When he was at the UN, he met my mother, who also worked there. They got married, and he had me. So I tell you all that to say that my upbringing, obviously, was very strict, and my life consisted of school, homework, and church, and that was it. I remember one day, actually, when I was in high school here, I got a 98 on an AP biology test that everyone else failed, and everyone was mad because I ruined the curve for everyone, and, you know, I was so happy because it was a hard test.
Mm-hmm.
And I went home, and I told my father I got a 98. I was so happy. He said, get that out of my face. Where's the other 2 points? Don't ever come to me with anything less than 100. And he came here to my school and asked my teachers how they could tell me that was okay. And he was just, growing up with him was, I had to be a perfectionist, you know, and I could never accept anything other than perfection. So that put a lot of pressure on me to do well.
And you did.
Yeah. You know, when I was in junior high school in sixth grade, my father walked in the classroom one day in October, in the middle of the day, interrupted the teacher and told me, you get all my things. And I was going to seventh grade. And I said, what's going on? He just took me across the hall to seventh grade, walked right in, said, there's an empty chair, sit down, you're in seventh grade now. So just like that. And then after seventh grade, he went back to the principal and told the principal that I wasn't going to eighth grade next year, I was going to high school, and that I needed to learn everything from eighth grade in the summer. And they actually did it. They got me a tutor. I started high school when I was 12. Now, this was a different school. This was New Covenant. It was a church school in the Bronx. And so after 10th grade, you know, I started to feel that I wasn't getting a good enough education. And so I asked to go to another school. I wanted to go to Bronx. And so Hostess Lincoln Academy was, you know, Blue Ribbon School of Excellence, and that's where I wanted to go. And so I came here for 11th and 12th grade. 15 when I graduated high school.
And straight from there, you went to college out of high school?
Yeah, yeah. I was actually the salutatorian here when I graduated. And I got into an accelerated BSMD program called Sophie Davis. It's on the City College campus. And you have to take a bunch of tests. You have to test out of a lot of subjects that you would normally take in college. And once you get in, if you make it through, you're guaranteed a spot in medical school. But if you passed it. Yeah, it was very challenging. I remember the first day of class, our chemistry professor told us to look to the person to your left and look to the person to your right. And he said, chances are they won't be graduating with you. There's only about a third of us actually graduate on time. And he was right. It was very, very difficult.
And how long did it take you?
So it's a 5-year program here on the City College campus. Mm-hmm. And then you have a little graduation. You get your bachelor's in biomedical science, and then you finish your last 2 years of medical school at one of 6 participating med schools. And I went to Albany Med for that. And so that was 7 years total. I graduated with my doctorate when I was 22, and then did my residency after that.
Now your patients that you see, mm-hmm. and they see that you're so young.
Yeah. like you had mentioned the other day, you know, people think I'm still in high school.
Yeah, you look like a kid.
So
you're a doctor.
Yeah. Especially like during residency, patients would say, so when am I going to see the doctor? And I said, I am your doctor. And they say, okay, is the real doctor going to come?
How do you manage that? How does that make you feel?
At first, you know, I was offended at first in the mm-hmm. beginning, but then I realized that, you know, I do look very young, and especially to see a black female in orthopedics, that's very rare. And so I can understand why patients don't expect that. They're kind of surprised. But after, you know, I explain what's going on with their condition and treatment options, and they actually come to realize that I know what I'm talking about, and they start to feel comfortable, and they end up not wanting to go to see anyone else but me.
So this, to the business now of, like, I guess you're in medical school,
mm-hmm.
City College, you become a young black female doctor.
Mm-hmm.
What does your father and mother say? How do they feel? Are they super proud? Your brother?
My brother's proud of me. He tells me that all the time. My parents don't really express that. My father never told me he was proud of me. I guess he always wanted me to strive for more. He didn't want me to think that I was okay where I was and become complacent. I knew my mother was proud, but I honestly did not think my father was proud of me at all until one day I overheard him, you know, bragging about me to someone, and I was shocked. He didn't know I was there that I could hear him, but yeah, he was very proud.
What's so cool?
Yeah.
So, God, you grew up with educated people
mm-hmm.
that cut you no slack.
No slack.
That's really hard.
Yeah. But they also gave me lots of support.
Of course. And it was for a reason, really. Yeah, There's a reason for that.
Mm-hmm. And the funny thing about it is I actually found out right before my father died that the reason why he pushed me to basically skip three grades was because he did.
Mm.
And so he graduated at a very young age, and I guess he wanted the same for me. He just never explained any of his actions. He just, you know.
Well, he probably saw that you were ready.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he didn't give you any warning.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when I hear you talk, it was very moving to hear your talk about your brother and the power of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And how that played throughout your studies mm-hmm. and your educational journey.
Mm-hmm.
Did it play a role?
A huge role. Huge role. I prayed all, I didn't think I could do it, you know. Like I said, the Sophie Davis program was really, really difficult. And there are so many times when I wanted to give up. I wanted to quit. I thought I wasn't smart enough. I couldn't do it. And I prayed all the time. One of my best friends, you know, she actually came to know God because, you know, whenever, you know, it looked like we would fail a test, I would take her and we would pray really hard and we would end up passing. And she was just blown away. And she actually became a Christian because of that.
So you said that you, when I first met you a couple of days ago, you just moved from another state.
Underserved.
Yeah, you know, there's a
big need for doctors. Yeah, so after my residency, I did a fellowship, and I did my fellowship in Philadelphia. I was going to come back to New York to practice because that's where I'm from, and everyone I know and love is here.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized that there are so many doctors in New York, almost too many doctors. Like, people here don't really need extra doctors, whereas there are places all over the country that are desperate for help. There are huge needs all over the country, but they're in places where people don't necessarily, you know, fight to be in, to live in. And so I felt moved to try to give back, and so I looked all over the country at, you know, underserved areas, and I went on a bunch of interviews all over the country, and I ended up settling in Arkansas. You know, there's something about that community that really touched me. The people just seemed very genuine, and the hospital there just really seemed like they wanted to help the community. They were more concerned about helping the community than about making their pockets fat. And that's what really drew me to them in the beginning.
And how long were you there?
I was there for a year and a half. You know, when I first came, I talked about all of the, you know, new technology that I wanted to bring there and provide to these patients that otherwise wouldn't have access to that kind of technology, and they were really excited about it. But it turned out that, you know, they were kind of nervous about new technology, and because they're a small community hospital, they didn't really feel comfortable doing certain things. And, you know, it got to the point where it got frustrating, and it's basically they wanted me to just do basic things. And, you know, I didn't come there to do basic things for these people. I wanted to provide more. And so I felt like if I was just going to do basic orthopedics there, then I might as well just come back home, you know, because they have other doctors there that are doing things like that. But I wanted to provide, you know, newer, innovative things for these people. And, you know, it was tough living there. I basically had to give up my life. You know, I had no life there at all. I was engaged before I moved there and had to break off the relationship. And so I moved halfway across the country by myself. And, you know, everyone there is married with lots of kids. And so when I wasn't working, I was just home. There was nothing to do. And it was terrible. and so that, coupled with the fact that I wasn't really being allowed to provide the kind of care I wanted to, I felt like it was time to come back home.
Are you happy?
I'm very happy now.
That's good.
Yeah.
And where are you working now, if you can share that?
So I am starting a new position at New Jersey Spine and Orthopedics, and I'm going to be doing primarily spine surgery there. So I'm excited. I'm starting next month.
Spine surgery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love spine surgery. It's very fulfilling. Out of all the different procedures I do, I find that, you know, you'll have a patient that has terrible leg pain that, you know, gets to the point where it's so debilitating they can hardly walk. And you do the procedure and you come out and see them in the recovery room, and a lot of times they're in tears. Their pain is gone. They can't believe it, you know. And so I love being able to help people like that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Lab.
One of my friends has a sister that is in the dental clinic school there. And he told me that she was looking for volunteers. And I said, well, I have some free time, and so I'd love to come and help out and give back. No, I let her practice on me. Well, I would tell them that you can be whatever you want to be. You can do whatever you want to do. And I know that sounds really cliche to them, because I'm sure they hear it all the time. But I want to tell them that it's absolutely true. With hard work and perseverance, there is nothing you can't do. I don't care what it is. all you need to do is set your mind to it and work hard. There will be failures along the way. I failed at things, but you get up and you keep trying. Look at my brother. You know, if he look how many times he couldn't get into medical school. And actually, his story, there's another part to his story. They found the person who shot him, which was, you know, a kid who was trying to get initiated into a gang. His mom was working three jobs. His father wasn't around, and he had no positive role models. And so my brother felt bad for him and actually went to jail to visit him and try to encourage him to read and try to educate himself while he was there. And my brother he really loved being able to try to encourage people who felt like their life was over. And he went into prison medicine. So he was the chief medical officer of a big prison system in Georgia, and he loves it. And so, but getting back to addressing young people, you know, if you work hard at something, it doesn't matter how many times you fail. If you never give up, you will eventually make it. And it doesn't matter how many times you failed. All that matters is that you made it. And so that's what I would say.
Thank you so much.
No problem. It's my pleasure.
Beautiful. Very inspiring.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.